The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side and issue number 73, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. We have a special guest this week. My daughter Meg is back to help us dissect this movie. We start off pretty slow. We're trying to figure out what we want to say. It was a little, I don't know why, it was a little awkward at the beginning with the three of us. But Meg brings the knowledge. She starts to get us going. She brings in a couple of really good points. Maybe we got to rename the podcast to The Dim Side, maybe? I don't know. But it gets going, and we have a really good time. Meg coming in hot with dad jokes. It's just a lot of fun. I can't wait for you to hear it. So let's get into the store. Hey, John. We're here.
We?
We. And you see,
I only got room for one.
Yep. All right, I'll wait outside.
Yep.
This, because actually this subject is your subject.
So, mine?
Well, not you. You too.
Okay.
This is your world. You guys, I'm along for the ride. Because I believe you've both seen this one twice, right?
Now? Yes, twice.
Yes, twice.
Twice?
Yeah, twice.
That's my daughter, Meg. She's back for her, what is it now, your third?
My fourth podcast.
Fourth?
Oh, that's correct. It's your third time with John and I, but we also did our solo one with the Rise of Skywalker, the
female perspective.
The female perspective. I didn't know which way to call it. A girl, women's, whatever.
At what point do we have to promote her to a regular cast member?
I think it's one more podcast.
Yeah, no longer a guest star.
And then that, yeah, exactly. She becomes an actual podcast member.
She
and
can
that
quit working for scale, yeah.
Right, it ups her pay to
nothing.
To what we make, right.
Yeah.
You get 75% of what we get.
Right.
So she's not owing us some money. Yeah. Like, 'cause negative is a number.
That's right.
Those books from last week, and Meg had the opportunity to check them out as well.
Yeah.
Yes, I did, as always.
Which one is your favorite, Meg?
My favorite?
Let you introduce the first one. What's your favorite out of the two?
I'm going to say The Black Cat.
The Black Cat one? Good call. And I know why you picked that as your favorite, because you like pink. And Black Cat is written in pink.
Perfect.
Exactly.
I was going to say it's because she doesn't know who the other character is.
Exactly.
There we go.
Can't put a name to it. I was going to say, she doesn't know who that is, so she can't even say.
Right. And that's why I said she likes pink. Black Cat is written in pink, so she could read that.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really cool one. I like that one. Who's the artist on that, John?
Greg Land.
Yeah, that's a good one. And the other one, Batman 92, right?
92.
We talked about it last week. That got bumped up.
Yes, that was originally from issue 94. They moved it forward to coincide with her appearance in that book.
Yeah, and as we talked earlier in our off-show conversation, this is the first appearance of, like, her full body, her face, everything.
Yeah, it's the first time we've really had a clear... Now, this picture's been all over the internet for a month already, so everybody that cares has already seen it, but
yeah,
as far as in publication, this is really the first kind of full reveal of the character.
Yeah, it's a really cool cover. Very, very busy. Very busy.
Yeah.
Brought a lot to that one.
What else do you want me to say?
I don't know.
It's like, yeah. Okay. I don't know what you want me to say.
All right, do we have any other news that's happened since the last time we spoke?
No.
You sure?
I don't.
Because we had a couple issues there in the middle. Maybe something broke? No.
Oh. did we?
No. All right. You ready to get into it this week then? Let's get into Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Yes.
Year 4. We'll run this trailer and then we'll come back and we'll have a great bright side chat with Meg as well.
All right.
Sounds good.
I'd like to make an announcement. Hogwarts Castle will not only be your home this year. Hogwarts has been chosen to host a legendary event. The Triwizard Tournament. Harry Potter!
How did you do it? I didn't put my name in that cup. I don't want eternal glory. It's Mad-Eye Moody.
Avada Kedavra. The killing curse. Only one person is known to have survived it, and he's sitting in this room.
People die in this tournament. The devils are inside the walls. The Dark Lord shall rise again. Is it Voldemort?
All right, who wants to go first?
Not it.
So we can go full spoilers here. This movie's from 2005.
Yeah.
When I put my DVD in, it says, congratulations, you're the last person to have seen this movie.
Yeah, right.
So.
Probably so.
I really enjoyed this movie. Very entertaining. Although I'm hoping you guys can, our conversation will help clarify some things because I've only seen it the once. I meant to watch it again since Meg and I watched it last Saturday.
Right.
But there's a lot to this movie.
It was, but the funny thing is I was thinking the whole time I was watching this today, and just to put a little perspective in it, this took me about 6.5 hours to watch today. So I had a lot of start and stops. So I didn't really get to pay full attention, but I had kind of forgotten what the end of this movie turned out to be because I saw it, I don't know, 6 months or 7 months ago. And the whole time I was watching it, I kept thinking, this movie is like the Lock and Key hockey scene to me. Just like a whole bunch of stuff happening for no real, like we're not going anywhere in the narrative until like the last 15 minutes of this movie. You know, it really didn't do anything to further the Voldemort story or anything like that. And it really just felt like a one-off movie until kind of like the very end. And it just kept your conversation about the hockey game and Lock and Key just kept popping into my head every time I hit start on this again. But
but it did – now
it did go somewhere finally at the end.
Right.
But I had kind of forgotten where it was going because, you know, I saw it one other time.
Right, but – I do not want to get back into Lock and Key, but you see what I mean, how like stuff means something and then when it pays off at the end, you're very grateful.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like in Lock and Key when at the end you were like, none of that paid off. So we won't get back into that, especially since Meg hasn't seen Lock and Key.
Oh, okay.
So, so Meg, what did you think watching it the second time? Did you remember everything or were you more like John?
I remembered most things. I remembered like the overall plot. I think this is probably the Harry Potter movie that pops on television the most. So if you're like channel surfing, I think this is the one that pops up the most. So that's the reason I think I remember it the most because I've seen snippets like throughout my life. And that's why like watching this movie for the first time, I was like, oh no, I definitely know this one. Like I knew the whole maze scene at the end. But I did want to make a comment about I just recently re-listened to your Prisoner of Azkaban podcast.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Yeah,
I knew we got another listener on that.
Yeah, before doing
you're the one.
This podcast because I was not present for that. So I did want to comment something that I think John made the point that he felt like that movie was disconnected from the whole Voldemort story because it was really focused on Sirius Black and like the titular character, like Prisoner of Azkaban and all of that. But I was making faces in the car listening to that. Like I couldn't wait to like talk, but unfortunately I didn't have a microphone in front of me. So I don't think that it strayed from the Voldemort story, and And I don't think this movie took a while, like you just said, to get to the Voldemort story, because all of it is a Voldemort story. Like, that's the feel I think they're trying to build, is that, like,
all of the movies, you mean?
Yeah, all of these people are involved, and some, like, everything is some in some way involved in that quote-unquote Voldemort story and building that plot line of the darkness taking over. And it's cool, the feeling that they gave you that it had kind of strayed away from Voldemort is the feeling that people in the universe had, that, like, it strayed away from Voldemort and that he wasn't going to come back.
Like, you forgot about him.
Yeah, like, people tried to forget about him, and, like, he who shall not be named, like, they didn't want to talk about him. And that's kind of, like, we talk about, like, people in real life who try to ruin people's lives by instilling terror. Like, that's what he did, so they just wanted to forget about it. You see that in real life. People deny horrible things that have happened in the world because they just don't want to accept that it happened. So that's what I think was kind of happening in the universe. So I think it's cool it had that effect on you too. But if you think about it, like, so many people in Azkaban, they're there because they were part of Voldemort's story, and they're part of everything that happened right before Harry was a baby and everything with his parents happened. So I just wanted to make that point because I thought it was interesting that you felt that way.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. And that's actually, that plays into pretty much how, like, John and I felt watching Goblet of Fire, in that it's like, it's almost like Voldemort didn't play much of a part in it all the way until the very end.
Right. Well, you had the dream sequence kind of that started the movie, and then it felt like it disconnected. Again, I guess that's the same thing I said about the last one. It kind of felt like it disconnected from the Voldemort story again until the very end of the movie. Then you realize when you get to the end that it wasn't. The whole thing was really building. Everything was manipulated to happen the way it happened to get to the point where, you know, we got to at the end where Harry was kind of part of them bringing Voldemort back.
And if you think about it, this has taken Harry 14 years to build in his life, 14 years to realize, like, how important Voldemort is going to be in his life and how important their history is going to be. And that's still building for us. Like, he didn't know that his dreams were something that were real. Like, he was having these, just in this movie, he was having these dreams, and then his scar would hurt, and right, that's something new for him. So, like, we're experiencing new parts of Voldemort's story as much as he is. So I feel like it, I understand that it feels slow, but I think it's purposeful.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I thought it was, like, that point that you made about Prisoner of Azkaban and what we were saying, that it didn't really pertain to Voldemort, seeing Goblet of Fire just that one time, it's like you completely forget about Voldemort till the end. And they, like you said, they're building that world, and it's like this entire arc is part of that. It's then that's a good point. I like that. That's pretty cool. It makes everything linked. And I like how John linked it to Lock and Key. But
only because it furthered your point of view.
Well, no, you know, I just think that's funny. It's like, but it did do that. Going into this movie, though, I wasn't aware that this is the first Harry Potter movie that was PG-13. Did you guys know that?
No, I didn't know that either.
No, I didn't know that.
I guess the other ones were PG, and so this one had a few, like, a little bit more scary.
I was gonna say, what was different? I don't know what was different about it compared to any of the other ones. It felt,
I don't know.
Felt pretty much the same. Year. Yeah, the rating system's probably just tightened up. Yeah, because you used to be able to do a lot more in a PG movie than you can now. So
yeah, but 2005. I mean, these things were all put out a few years apart. Well, it was, you know,
there's a beginning and an ending at any time. Like, the ratings could have changed in 2004. I don't know what the guidelines were, but it just didn't feel any different to me than the previous three as far as violence or, you know, adult themes. I guess because they all went on a date in this one, maybe that made it PG-13.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, the actors are getting older. The actors are probably over 13 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the first one that was a little bit more racier. I thought the action in this one was really good. Let's get into my wheelhouse here for a second.
Yeah.
Some of that was like, what, Quidditch on steroids?
Yeah. Yeah.
That scene.
The World Cup.
Well, because remember I had mentioned that at one of the last shows that Quidditch was going to come back in a big way again, and this was it, because now it's, you know, more of a professional level that you were seeing. You know, seemed to be a little bit more fast-paced and action-packed than what we saw before, I think.
Yeah, I actually, and I was, it was funny, I was actually disappointed that it ended.
Yeah, I wanted to watch I wanted to watch the whole game.
Yeah, I was ready to put money down. It was really, really well done. I thought the challenges were really well done as well. I thought they were entertaining, but I thought they all brought a level of fear. That underwater one, especially.
Yeah,
I thought that was a pretty cool use of, like, not world building, I guess, but putting Harry Potter in a different place, I guess, than he had been in the past. We hadn't been underwater with him before, had we?
No, we have not.
No.
I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought it was cool to bring in the two other schools, too, because I feel like that's something that wasn't ever mentioned before in this movie. Like, before this movie, like, you never knew, like, oh, they were from different countries. And I feel like you never assumed that anybody outside of the UK was a wizard. So, like, there was Hogwarts, and that was it.
That's a great point, because that talk about world building, that I had no idea. Obviously, I've never read the books or anything like that, so I had no idea that I thought Hogwarts was, like, the only place.
Yeah, and unfortunately, not to spoil, but it doesn't go anywhere further either. Like, it was kind of the first and last time that we see.
Oh, really?
We don't really go outside of Hogwarts again through the next three movies, which is, I guess, a little bit of a shame that they introduce these kind of cool characters and you don't really ever get to visit with them again.
Yeah, but it is a Harry Potter story.
Well, I understand.
So it's kind of doing the world building of, okay, we're going to show you that this isn't the only school. I wonder if in the future that they could build off of that and go to another school and have another story about another character from another school.
Well, yeah, I don't want to, I hesitate to say a whole lot about what happens next, because you haven't seen the other movies, so I don't want to play spoiler.
So everything I'm guessing at is wrong.
Well, but what I was going to say is, like, Voldemort is like a threat to the entire world, not just Hogwarts. So like, at some point, Voldemort has to be dealt with before the end of these movies. And I just think it would have been kind of cool if, like, everybody had to come together and help be part of that. You know, like the other schools, which isn't what happens.
Feels a little more Avengers-y, though, than, like, Harry Potter. Like, it's about Harry Potter. That's why we're at Hogwarts, because that's where Harry Potter went.
I get it. But, but again, he's a threat to the whole world, not just Hogwarts. You know, if Harry can't stop him, like, he's going to go all over. He's not just going to stop in England.
Yeah, but I feel like we could revisit that point at the end with all the movies finished.
I guess it's too Avengery.
We all band together.
Yeah. So you open the show by saying you were hoping that we could explain some things to you. So what exactly were you hoping that we could explain for you? And not that I profess to be any kind of expert, because I'm not, but...
Oh, nothing. I didn't have anything specific. I just know that after we do these podcasts and I have these conversations with you guys, I learn a lot more about the movies.
Oh, okay.
So, like, just for instance...
So,
like,
no talking points we're going to get out of this.
No, that's what I mean. It's like...
I put that ball on the tee for you, and you whiffed it, man.
Sorry. No, but that's what I mean. It's like just having, but like Meg already started out with her, you know, her mention of Prison of Azkaban.
Right.
And that how stuff, and that's what I mean. It's like getting other people's perspective, because I'll be honest with you. It's like it's not my favorite series.
Yeah.
I'm entertained by the movies. I'm happy to do them, but it's not like I'm like, I don't know. It's not my genre. But I am enjoying them, and they are picking up, obviously.
Right.
It's, and some of it, like, I don't know. Like,
well, the pace continues to ramp up from now till the end.
What, there's seven of them?
There's seven of them, which is really...
So we have one more.
Like, one more, and then, right, and then the two-part finale, basically. But I feel like it continues to ramp up in stakes.
Yeah, I feel like it continues to get a little more like your speed, like your kind of movie, just like
Fast and the Furious or whatever.
Yeah, it just gets like more actiony, and it gets more interesting, and it's less purely symbolic, and like you have to like pick it apart to know what's happening or appreciate it.
Well, yeah. And that's why I thought, like, on the other podcast that you were in with us, Meg, there was a lot of symbolic stuff. And that's what I was wondering, if there was more symbolic stuff in this one that you guys noticed going throughout. Like, I didn't feel like this one was as deep. I felt like this was more straightforward. It started off a little different than the other ones.
This was the first one that didn't start off with, like, is it the Dursleys, or is that the name of the family?
Yeah, with, like, Harry at home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is the first time we don't see that family at all in the movie. So that was a little different, because we actually opened with the dream sequence, and then he was at the Weasleys.
Yep.
My favorite thing about this movie that I feel like you'll appreciate after we talk about it is how it really, for Harry Potter and the series in general, establishes, like, the concept of consequence and permanence and consequences. I feel like that's a really hard thing for kids' movies to do, and it's something that I think people in the filmmaking world stray away from, and I think it's a brave step for producers to have done coming off of the books. I think it's something that could be easy to change, but they went for it. And the biggest thing we see in this movie is with Cedric, obviously, and how he goes in and doesn't come out from the maze.
Right.
I personally really like that aspect, because I think it's, like I said, hard to find consequence in children's movies like that. And if you're somebody wanting to raise your kids understanding certain aspects of the world, and, like, actions do have consequences, and they could have serious consequences depending on the action, like, this is a good way. Like, I think it's a good introduction of the concept.
Because, that could,
like,
be why it was PG-13.
I was just going to say, I bet you that's why it was PG-13, because I think he's the first student death that we have in the series. Yeah. So, you and I were
other
thinking,
than, like,
yeah,
we've seen Moaning Myrtle, who we, like, heard about her death, and then, like, they talked about, like, oh, there's been a death at Hogwarts, but this was, like, you saw it happen, and even,
you got to,
like,
know the character, you felt for the character, because
and
he was
you,
a
his
good
dad
guy.
Was there.
Yeah,
right.
His,
right.
That,
his that
dad
was
there
a tough
when they
scene.
Brought him out.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, even you said when we were watching it, you were like, "That's it." Like, he died, and then you looked at me and you were like, "Wait, that's it?" Like, you expect something more. You expect, like, oh,
magic,
they're going to
bring
him
back,
but you can't. Like, that is, like, even with magic, like, yes, this series is about magic and fairy tale in some sense, but it still has that inkling of, like, truth and reality to it that can really show you, like, actions have consequences, and this is what happens when you get yourself mixed up in things.
Well, and Dumbledore even says that exactly in this movie when he's talking to Harry at the end about seeing his parents at the graveyard, and he says no amount of magic can bring back the dead or undo the dead or whatever he said.
Right.
So, I mean, that kind of plays into that with Cedric as well, that dead is dead. There's no coming back from it. Unless you're Voldemort, and then you can come back from the dead.
He wasn't really dead, though.
Yeah, I guess.
He was Voldemort? Like, yeah, he wasn't really dead. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
More in other movies. Yeah, you can't. That's what I like about this movie, though, is I think it touches on that, and I think it's relatable for kids, because you start to see, especially you start to see, like, the teen drama, and you start to see, like, Ron is just.
Yeah, that whole Ron and Hermione thing.
Get
is,
a grip this whole movie. And then the whole Ron Hermione thing and the whole, like, difficulty in the friend group and everything like that. Like, it's cool to start to see that. And then especially, like, I think that's a place in childhood that you see start to feel consequences. Like, oh, you might do something and it messes up a friendship, and you could lose friends or you could gain friends. And that's where you start to build consequences. But then you get to see, like, okay, then you make a really big mistake, and here's a consequence.
I did feel like I really kind of felt like the whole beef between Ronald and Harry was too contrived, though, and didn't feel realistic. It didn't feel right to me, based on the way these characters had been portrayed from the prior three movies. It just felt like that beef was really for no reason. Like, you don't really understand why Ron gets so mad at Harry because his name gets picked out of the goblet or what have you.
Right.
Then Harry gets the message that he should have known came from Ron about the dragon, because Hermione basically says, Ron told me to tell you that Hagrid's looking for you or what have you. And then he comes back and fires back at Ron afterwards like he's furious with him. And I'm like, I don't understand where this is all coming from. It just felt too, I don't know. I know it's teen drama, but it didn't, that was the one thing that didn't really feel
like it fit I agree in with to you. Me. I felt that way as well, but I'm wondering, like you just said, like, is that teen drama?
Well, like, I don't know, but I don't remember ever acting like, I was a teenager too, and I don't think I was that stupid.
Right, but that's the thing is when you're doing it, I don't think you think you're stupid.
Yeah.
But when you, but if you watch teens and you go, I never acted like that. But now this is real life. I'm talking like you watch teenagers in real life and go, I never acted that.
Yeah, I was never that dumb. But...
And then it's like my mother has a report card from when I was in grade school and I got a D. And in my artistic ability, I changed it to a B. And apparently I had no artistic ability because if I showed you this, it was like, you see it and go, I think it was written.
I just put a straight line there and it looked like a B to me. But
yeah, but John, I want to say that, and this is going to ruin all my art credibility. I want to say the teacher wrote it in black ink and I corrected it in blue ink. Or it was, but it looks like a little kid did it. Right. I mean, it was as bad as like the kid with Oreos all over his face going, I didn't do it.
Right.
I didn't eat anything, you know, and I'm like, I've seen the report card, you know, since like as an adult and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like when you're a kid and you're going through it, you don't, it's hard to relate. You don't get it. But
you're
as
so
adult,
dumb.
Exactly.
Really, really like, dumb.
You're so dumb.
She doesn't know what we're talking about.
No, it's another podcast we listen to and they talk about how people send in things on how dumb they are. Things they used to believe. Like, what was the one today? It was
the guy thought that gas stations only were built on places where they had struck oil.
Yeah. But
that's,
you know,
something
what
I would believe.
Yeah.
I liked that one because I think I believe that
as
well.
A kid. Yeah, you would believe that.
Exactly. I'm on board with that.
The other day I was thinking about times like when I was little that like you guys surprised me with something and it made me really happy and I was like, wow, that was a great time. And then I was talking to my friends and I was like, actually, I think they probably told me we were going there and I just wasn't paying attention. So then when we showed up, I was like, wow, they're so nice. Like, what a great surprise. And everybody's like, yeah, that sounds like you.
Yeah. It's easy to surprise a goldfish.
Yeah.
Hey, what are we doing here?
Oh, I do think that, like, I also think Ron is really annoying in this movie, and I think in the next next few movies,
the bashing Ron.
No, I think he gets really annoying, but I do think that's teen drama. Like, I don't know, I was never a guy as a teen, but I feel like that's the way people
this day
act,
and age, and that's needed to be specified.
I feel like I'm in like that in between right now, where sometimes people still act like that, and then sometimes people act like their age. So, like, I see that, and you see, like, what is this? Like, what are you even fighting about? Like, people come to me with problems, and I'll be like, I don't understand why you're upset. Like, get over it. So I do think that's totally normal. Like, I think it's probably normal teen drama. If you think about it, though, it's probably adult writing teen drama.
Teen drama, yeah.
So they're trying – so it could feel more exacerbated in that way. But I think that's what it's trying to get at and trying to be relatable in that aspect. But it's more like annoying. But I think if you watched a bunch of teenagers fight, it would be annoying.
Probably. Yeah. I have kids.
Yeah. You're like, what? Why are you fighting? Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought that this movie had probably, obviously, the best acting to date. All the characters were older now. I thought they did the best job of, obviously, I haven't seen any of the other movies, but it is the best acting to date. It's the most engaging.
Well, and they're settled. And they're settling into their roles by now,
right?
And I
think that it being PG-13 helps that too, because they're able to act more, not act more. I don't mean as in acting purposes, but I mean like they're playing more of an adult role, a more grown up role. So it lends more to it instead of just being a child.
Right.
There's less grown up presence in this movie too, though. If you think about it, there's. Yeah. I feel like in the last two movies, there's a lot of like adult presence, and in this, I feel like it's like all the kids trying to figure things out together, which is cool, and I think it'll lend. Well, obviously, I've seen the other movies, but I think like that builds something new for what's coming, because everybody's focused on Harry Potter and his like connection with Voldemort and he's 14. Where's his support going to come from? All these people, all these adults in these movies have already seen the age of Voldemort and they were helpless against it. Like we know it was a horrible time. They were helpless against it. So what are they going to bring to the table that's new now? Maybe something, maybe nothing.
Right.
But now you have this whole new generation of kids that you're raising. What are they going to bring to the table? So it's cool to see them all start to like kind of build a bond together because that's going to be important.
What did you guys think of Harry's name coming out of the goblet? That one there, I saw it coming a mile away. As soon as they picked the third name, you knew a fourth name was coming. But yet they only picked three. So why would a fourth come out? I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I think this whole lock and key thing is sending me for a loop. This is, I don't understand why they did it. Why? I mean, before they drew the names, they say you have to be 17. And then they pull out Harry's name. He didn't put it in. He's not 17. So wouldn't the goblet know he's not 17?
Well, I mean, the short answer is because they had
the goblet not make the rule.
Yeah. Well, they had to have him in the movie. And I guess we're supposed to understand that he's exceptional, right? Like he's the exception to all the rules. But I also agree with you. Like to me, it was really just plot point. Like it didn't follow the rules that they had already established.
I disagree again. I think that we're supposed to be. I think it's supposed to start to show you what dark magic can do. You don't know when that name comes out of the goblet that there's dark magic involved because you don't know that that professor is not. That professor, I forget what his name is. The one with the funky eye.
Yeah, Mad-Eye Mooney.
Yeah, Professor Mooney. You don't know he's not who he says he is, and you don't know that that David Tennant character is hiding in there. So you don't know dark magic is involved. You could assume it because dark magic is there, but that's like everyone's surprise. Like everyone in the universe, it wasn't just like everybody was like, oh yeah, Harry's special, like everybody was like, how did that get in there? And then to have those adults decide, okay, we're gonna let this play out, like was a dangerous decision on their part. Like they're putting lives at risk, and they did, and that's on them. They put Cedric's life at risk, they put Harry's life at risk. Nobody knew what was going on, and they ultimately played into Voldemort's plan. This was Voldemort all along. So you're starting to see what he is capable of, what Voldemort is capable of when he's not even fully powerful yet. He's speaking through people. It's like the prisoners of Azkaban. Like they all know something's brewing, and he's speaking through people. And that guy got out of Azkaban, and nobody even knew, and he was like this huge criminal. So you're starting to see like how powerful his hold is on people, and that there are people hiding in the shadows that will do anything for him. Because of fear or because of want for power, we don't know. But that's what I think that's supposed to be, not just like, oh, we need a plot point, let's make up this game and then say there should only be three people and then throw in a fourth, because why not? It has to be Harry.
John, see what happens when she doesn't see lock and key?
Well, right, because I was going to go back to
points like that.
Well, I was going to go back to that lock and key thing again, because, you know, when you had said, I don't want to spoil lock and key for Meg, but when you were talking about the fear and how people just went with it, that's kind of how I felt with this. Like,
right.
They're like, oh, we know there's only supposed to be three, but the goblet spit out four, and the goblet's all-knowing, so, like, if the goblet says this, we gotta do it, but they all just went with it. Like, they didn't...
Right. But,
you know, because Dumbledore could have made the decision to not let Harry participate.
So...
That was within his power to do so.
From that point on, I liked those scenes. I agreed with those scenes. I agreed with what the adults did there in that room, because I felt that that was part of their world and that was part of the established world, that they were like, look, we could say no, but we don't know what the ramifications are if you say no, because we've never said no.
Right.
And there's a balance to these things. And if we say no, maybe something else happens that we don't know about. So I felt like that part I understood. But after listening to Meg's explanation, especially in this, I give a lot more credit to the Harry Potter world than I'll give to that lock and key world. But I like Meg's explanation. And I think my judgment was clouded not by Lock and Key, but by my movie-going experience in knowing that, yes, this is a Harry Potter movie. I know Harry Potter's name has to come out of there because it's his movie.
Right.
So I'm expecting that, where Meg looked at it a little differently, where it's like, no, this is how you explain that dark magic is involved. It's not the screenwriters that put his name out in there and took it out. It's the dark magic. It's like, absorb yourself into the world, and I can understand what Meg is saying. Whereas I think you and I are looking at it from the critical moviegoer, like, oh, of course it's Harry Potter.
Well, I mean, you knew all along that it was going to be in there. I mean, there was no question about that. I don't know. Again, also, I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I'm just saying it's kind of like they went with it. Well, and I guess I say they went with it, but they weren't all in agreement. So they didn't really. Dumbledore was kind of the last word on the subject, and he kind of made the decision because they didn't all think that was the right thing to do.
Which is interesting. Like, the person from the Ministry of Magic was the one who was saying, like, oh, the goblet said, like, that's what the goblet said. That's what we have to go with.
Right.
But they made the point that Dumbledore isn't afraid to break the rules. So why are you saying yes? So that's even a deeper point. And then, like, think about, like, why is he saying yes if he's not one to always follow rules? Like, he must be making this decision for a reason. And he said, like, this must have happened for some sort of reason. He knew somebody put that there. Let's see how this plays out. Like, let's see the reason. Which, was that a mistake? I don't know.
Right, because I guess
what would have happened if he didn't.
He went on the assumption that it had to be for a reason, and the reason was a good one. Never really crossed his mind that this could be could have a detrimental outcome.
I don't know if he knew or assumed the reason would be a good one, because he could have pulled Harry at any point. Just because you're already competing doesn't mean you have to keep competing. You could, if he's not afraid to break the rules of the games, he could have just said Harry Potter is disqualified and not had him there. And he saw signs. He saw how Harry was having those dreams, and he pulled Harry into that memory of the meeting with the ministry. Like, he saw all these red flags, but he still let it continue, and that's going to speak to his character and what his role in all of this is. I don't know. I feel like it's got interesting points that if you, like, dig deep, you can find them.
Yeah, and that's why I said, like, there you go, John. There's one of the talking points that I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that helps shed light for me.
Right. Well, me too.
Yeah. John, you've beaten me down. I've become a pessimist. We're going to have to rename the show.
There you go.
Star Wars already branded that. You can't take
My work here is done.
What, the dark side?
You're going to have to go to the dim side,
the
maybe?
The dim side, yeah.
It's even worse.
Yeah,
you can't
exactly
pick a side. You're just dim.
The gray dim side. We don't know one way or the other.
The beige side.
Yeah.
Wah,
yeah.
What did you think about seeing Lucius in that graveyard when when Voldemort pulled off Lucius's mask? Lucius Malfoy, Draco's dad.
Well, I guess DJ, because I've already seen it, so
yeah,
like, it wasn't a surprise for me.
I'm trying to remember the scene.
When Voldemort had finally become, like, an almost
Voldemort,
person, minus
a
nose.
And he had, like, all his followers were there.
And
he had
all his followers.
He was getting on all their butts because they didn't come looking for him. And
yeah.
Then he singles out Lucius and pulls his mask off. Or I don't know if he even pulls his mask off, but he calls him by name.
You see,
he says Lucius.
He pulls his mask off. He says his name and then pulls his mask off.
Okay.
But so, like, Harry first hears the name and then also gets the chance to see his face, but it's never talked about after that point. It's never, like, Harry comes back and he's like, Voldemort's back, and Lucius is working for him. He never says that.
No, but I feel like he never trusted Lucius from the very beginning anyways. So I don't think he was probably super surprised by
Yeah, but
by
I feel
it.
Like if you had that proof, if I was 14 years old and I was in
yeah.
that situation and I had that proof, I'd go back and I'd be like, it's him, like, he's working for him. So
right.
I thought it was interesting that he didn't say anything, and I thought it was super intelligent and intuitive of Harry
yeah, 'cause
to
actually,
read into something like that.
He talked about the other ones that were there.
Yeah.
So you're right. He did. He talked about everybody else that was there except for Lucius. But I didn't even think twice about it till you just brought it up, honestly. So yeah, it's interesting that he didn't call him out.
I'm just trying to figure out who Lucius is.
Yeah.
That's what's that, like, he's been the bad guy all along, though.
Well, he's,
and like his son is like, isn't his son like the main?
Well,
he's,
but
been,
he's
Harry's bad guy.
Right. His son's been Harry's nemesis throughout the movies.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily, like, you had no proof that the family itself was involved with evil. You know what I mean? They really came off prior to this as just like the stuck up, you know, think that they're better than everybody family.
Right.
But now you get, like, now Harry has proof, without a doubt,
and
that,
he, like,
you know, he's working with Voldemort. Right, but
so
he kept
it
to himself.
Right, I think him keeping it to himself was the bigger surprise to me than him being a bad guy.
Yeah,
I think him being a bad guy was just, it was more of a confirmation than a reveal. You know, you were like, yeah, it's not like I was like, oh my God. I mean, the entire family's been like a dink through the entire
Well, they
thing.
Have, right, but...
But we know that. Like, we know Lucius put Tom Riddle's diary in Ginny's bag, like, two movies ago, and we saw that, and, like, we knew he was horrible to Dobby.
Right, Harry didn't.
And Harry figured that out at
Dobby
the end,
wasn't
but
in
it's...
this one.
No. But we knew that by the end of whatever movie that was, The Chamber of Secrets, I think.
Yeah.
And Harry knew that by the end, but that's also something he never shared. Like, oh, Lucius did that. That's something he kept to himself. This is something he's also kept to himself. He didn't run back and tell everyone that Lucius is working for him. Because if you think about it, most people that are working with Voldemort are in Azkaban, escape from Azkaban, or flying so low under the radar that nobody knows. And Lucius is like a double agent. Like, he's kind of really dangerous in that way. Like, he works for the ministry. He's very high up in the ministry. So for Harry to not run back to tell everybody that, I think is interesting that a 14-year-old would be so intelligent and, like, looking into the future to think, okay, but what does this mean for the ministry? Like, what does this mean for the power there? If I tell them, is everybody corrupt? If I, like, is everyone that Lucius knows also corrupt? And what good is telling the ministry going to be then? And what good are they going to do against Voldemort? So
right, like, he doesn't want to do anything until he knows who he can trust. He who he can trust.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think that kind of starts to plant the seeds for, like, who can you trust?
But going back
to
that, like, why doesn't he trust Dumbledore with that information?
That's what I was just going to say.
Because you feel like maybe he doesn't trust the ministry. And the ministry, you find out, I mean, you get good reason not to trust them going forward. Yeah. But he had no reason to doubt Dumbledore. Like, now that you're mentioning it, I don't know why he decided to keep the secret from Dumbledore. I don't know what that purpose that played for him.
Dumbledore had also just made the decision to send him into a tournament that killed his friends. So, like, I don't know if I would come back being like, oh, I'm going to tell him everything, because he might be uncertain still. He might be coming back, like, still has a sense of trust in Dumbledore, but just how much can he trust him? Like, I feel like he's starting to have more trust in his friends and maybe, like, Hagrid than all of the adults in his life that he used to look to, like, give him the answers. He's kind of starting to realize he has to find the answers for himself.
Yeah, I don't know. I never got the feeling that his faith in Dumbledore was shaken, even by sending him into the tournament. And I don't necessarily even agree that Cedric and he were friends. They became bonded through the trials, but they weren't friends going into this at all.
They were like acquaintances going into it, but I feel like through the trial and like they tried to help each other.
Right.
Well, he helped Cedric first and then Cedric returned
like a
the
quid
favor.
Pro quo
so
type
right.
thing.
Yeah. Like Cedric had like one line in the whole movie. He wasn't very important. It was more like his death that was important to the movie. I feel
pretty
like
big thing.
Yeah.
He gave his life.
I was actually laughing in the movie because I love Robert Pattinson and I remember watching it for the first time and being like, oh, that's so interesting. Like, I wonder what character he's going to play. Because I was like,
right,
oh,
he doesn't play anybody.
He's great for Harry Potter. Yeah. He literally says, like, he smiles and he laughs. He, like, hides his face when they're passing out those buttons. And right. then he's like, hey, I'm sorry about the buttons.
Right.
And that's, like, line number one. And then line number two is, like, take the egg into the water.
Right,
and
go up to the bathtub.
That's his whole movie. And right. then he's dead.
Yeah.
I broke the news to her that he's playing Batman, and now she's all in for the next Batman movie.
All in for Batman. Not that I didn't like superheroes before, but
now you definitely do.
Do you have a problem with Christian Bale?
I'm more of like a Marvel than DC. So
all the Chris's.
I don't have a yeah. It's all the Chris's, but I'll go right to watch the Rob movie. Yeah. No, there I don't. Go. I don't have anything against DC. I'd just rather watch Marvel. But now that you put Rob Pattinson as Batman.
And the whole Twilight thing where you were, what was the competition in that one?
Edward and Jacob. I was Team Edward.
You were Team Edward?
Yes.
I guess that's Pattinson.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
Saw a few midnight showings.
I didn't
of that
see
series.
Any of them. So.
Yeah, we did our
My
midnight
wife,
showings.
Lydia took the girls to see all the midnight showings. I stayed home.
No.
I've never seen a single minute of Twilight.
Oh no, we went to the midnight showings together. I don't know if you've seen the movies, but they put in for some fun 13-year-old dad time.
Yeah, well, my daughters were, yeah, they were around the same age as well. They were the same age as you, basically. So my wife did all that with them.
We went to one with my buddy and his daughters.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think we were the only two guys in the theater.
Yeah.
And it was all like wives, you know,
moms and daughters.
Yep. And then there's like these two 40 something year old guys looking like, uh-oh.
Yeah. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. It's like, I think, Meg, the one that you and I went to alone, I think we were alone in the one where they, the honeymoon one, and they broke the bed.
I don't know if... Yeah,
I think we were alone. For that
I think the, I think that was the second one we went to. I think before we went,
and
with,
it was like
I think
the
before
two of us
we
are
went
sitting
with,
there, and it's like,
yeah,
I don't know if you haven't seen.
I haven't
it,
seen
John,
it, but I get the gist of what you're talking
you get,
about.
The vampire has like crazy strength.
I get
you know
it.
Think of Luke Cage.
Yeah,
and when Jessica, you know the scene with Jessica Jones and they like smash the room.
That's kind of that.
It actually, I think it was almost as graphic, if not more graphic than that.
It was pretty graphic,
especially
but it was
when
like,
your daughter is sitting next.
Well, yeah,
to you.
But it was
like
what, a majority of the movie too. It wasn't just like one scene and done. It was like
a
it
lot.
Carried
it was like
through,
50 Shades of Grey,
like the whole beginning of the movie, and I was just like, do I look at the screen? Do I look at the wall? Do I look at the screen? Do I look at the
it's
wall?
Like, it's like my dad's here, so I look at the wall.
I was going to break it with some with a joke or something, but I didn't know how.
Yeah, it's best just to be quiet.
I mean, in theory, it's super awkward, but what we watched, like, is it Die Hard that starts out with, like, a naked woman in the window? Like, we watched that when I was little, so... Not little. Yeah, I wasn't like 6 years old. Like, oh, boobs.
I was four.
Yeah.
but I mean, like, we've watched that stuff like as a family because it's Die Hard and that's Christmas. So
that's my girl.
It's Christmas to me.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Let's get back to Harry Potter. And
back to
we went way off on
PG-13.
This is a bright side PG-13 bright side chat.
Yeah.
Die Hard was PG-13, wasn't it?
Oh no,
I think it was R, wasn't it?
I thought it was PG-13.
I think Die Hard was R.
Interesting.
Yeah, with that violence.
Yeah.
And boobs.
Yep.
Alright, I think we've reached our limit of saying that word.
Saying boobs.
Alright.
Yep, there we go.
You have to start editing it out.
Yeah. Alright, where were we?
We were talking about Cedric. Kind of, this is not connected to anything, but it's just a random thought that I just had.
That's okay.
Going back to the trials, first of all, I wanted to make the point that Harry basically loses every trial because he's the only one that actually stands back to help anybody.
Has a heart.
That causes him to, you know, basically not come in first in all these trials. But going back to the underwater trial where he rescues the sister of the, you know, the other student. Who was actually going to rescue that girl if Harry did it?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Like, were they just going to let her die?
Yeah.
Because
they had divers on the scene.
Because they didn't they didn't let the other one go in the water. She was out of the competition. And the mer people were like, you can only save one. And that's why they were fighting with Harry. And it just kept, I kept thinking, like, what was going to happen to this girl if,
I was thinking about that when I was just like, we were talking about something and I was in my head going back to the consequences thing. And I was like, wait, would that have been a consequence?
Right.
Like, if Harry didn't save her, would they just have been like, oh, sorry, yep, we stole her and you can't have her back now.
She's collateral damage. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think they would have. I think they just would have released her. That's fine. That didn't bother me. On that same point, though, what bothered me was they gave him second place and not first when he exactly, I mean.
Right. He says he would have won.
He would have won, but instead of winning, he decided to save everybody. And that's why he actually was trying to save everybody.
Right.
And then that other, the one that I didn't, and that was a big reveal to me. I didn't know that shark was him.
Right.
But he comes barreling through.
And saves
his person, which you thought that was, she was being taken away or whatever.
Yeah, Harry was trying to save three of them at one point.
Exactly. Yeah. So he was way in the lead. He's trying to save all three of them. He ends up saving two of them, and they're like, well, you came in third, but we'll give you second.
Right.
Why didn't you get, if you have that power, like Meg said earlier, like, why don't you just give him first?
Right, because you said he would have come in first if he didn't stop and save these people.
So we're going to penalize you one spot for being a great guy. Nice guys finish second,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, that was a little weird. And nobody protested that either. Like, the other team just went with it.
Yeah, I like when
it's like
Harry
Dumbledore's
talked.
At the school that's benefiting from these arbitrary rules changes, and nobody really questions it, you know?
Right.
It's like you're not biased at all because they're both from Hogwarts.
I like when Harry thought he came in last, and they're like, no, I didn't even finish.
Right, the other one was disqualified, so you came in second to last.
Right. And he's like, oh, okay, cool.
What did you think of the reporter lady in the movie who's like always present, but like nobody knows why? She was like at everything. She was even in the ministry meeting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was standing in the corner, like taking notes in a secret meeting. I thought that was weird.
Yeah, I honestly didn't even notice. I just kind of felt like she was the reporter that would surround any sporting event. I didn't notice. Yeah. I didn't notice her in the ministry meeting, so I didn't. I guess.
Does
I didn't
she pay off later?
Like,
no, I don't think she
I was
ever
just
shows up again.
What you thought of her.
Right. Maybe that's what she was.
She reminds me of The Hunger Games. What's her name? Effie Trinket from The Hunger Games. You know, like,
yes.
Really, I forget who plays her.
Never seen.
She reminded me of her. She reminded me of her a lot.
The midnight showing we did.
Oh yeah, she reminded me of her a lot, and just like that to me gave her her role in the Harry Potter movies as like the obnoxious, like just like the public eye on everything.
Well, I
like,
felt
that's I think what she's supposed to be is the public and how
yeah, and
like,
she was
annoying they can be.
She was writing the story as she saw it, regardless of what anybody had to say. Because, like, you know, he kept correcting his age and she didn't care anything about it. Like, she was just writing her story. It didn't really matter what the facts were. You know, she was just putting it out there the way she saw it. But I just thought she was an annoying reporter that was assigned to the event. I honestly didn't think anything suspicious about her. Because, again, knowing as it goes forward, she doesn't pay off later, so.
Right.
You wouldn't.
I think she was just that. She was that reporter to give it that sports feel.
Yeah.
That, like, here, this is on display and this is going to be reported on everywhere. Just to give, and also to give it that backstabbing feel as well. Almost like this is a popular thing, and maybe it's part of that world building stuff to like what you were saying earlier, Meg, where we talked about the multiple schools and you never really hear about it again. But here we have this reporter that is reporting on stuff, and she doesn't care about facts. She wants to entertain the readers. So there's people outside of these schools that are actually that are paying attention to this stuff. Or maybe these papers that her paper or whatever only goes to the schools. I don't know. I think it's more of it trying to expand the universe beyond the walls of Hogwarts.
I feel like it could play into the whole, like, people, like, the public wanting to be blind to what's really going on because she's super all over that sporting event. And, like, I don't think it was random that she was thrown into the corner of that ministry meeting.
Right.
So, like, she was there, but why didn't people ever hear about it then? Or, like, why aren't people more upset about what went on in that meeting? And why is that something Harry had to go into Dumbledore's memories to find out about, rather than just, like, hearing about it himself through the news? So, I don't know. I feel like it could play into that, like, there's a lot more going on in the world, and people could have seen Voldemort coming a lot earlier than they did, but they kind of just pretended it wasn't happening, and now he's here, and everybody's freaking out because they're like, oh, what are we going to do now? We thought he was never going to come back because they just didn't want to believe it.
But they didn't know we have 7 movies.
That's true. They weren't aware of their length of stay.
Yeah. Have they not read their contracts?
Have they not read their contracts? That's a good one.
Elizabeth Banks plays Effie, by the way.
Yes, Elizabeth Banks, her.
She was in that...
Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, she's one of, like, the anchors. She, that's, like, her role. She's, like, a reporter, like, the annoying, like, all-over-you public eye.
Yeah.
She's great, though. I think she's awesome.
Yeah. All right, where does this rank in your Harry Potter movies so far?
So far?
Yeah, because I know you guys have seen the other ones, but compared to, this is 4, where does it rank as far as the movies go? Like, the first 4 movies.
I got my wheels turning.
What's that?
I said you got my wheels turning.
For me, it's second.
Second?
Yeah, for me, it's second.
That's funny. That's for me, too. I actually like the third one.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last one, which I can't remember, what was the last one?
Prisoner of Azkaban.
Prisoner of Azkaban. Yeah, I like that one a little better than this one. You know, the first two, we've talked about it, were kind of like the world-building movies.
Yes.
And even though I liked both of them, they weren't very action, like, not a lot, you know, they weren't very exciting movies.
Right.
So I feel like this third and the fourth one are where the action starts to pick up, and they get a little bit more exciting. I think this one wasn't quite as good as the last one. I liked the whole, like, the time travel aspect and all that stuff that we got in the last movie. This one, like you said, this one felt very on the surface to me. Now, maybe it is a little bit deeper based on some of the stuff that Meg has said that you and I really didn't catch. But this one felt very on the surface to me. Like, there wasn't really anything underlying going on. So I don't think it was as deep as the third one. So for me, it's second.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You basically stole all my thunder.
Good.
It's we're of like minds on this. I thought the same thing. Like, it wasn't as deep. But the one thing I will add is I thought it was the most entertaining one. I thought the action.
Yes.
All the tests. I thought the Quidditch match.
It was more exciting.
Yeah, there was a lot more fun stuff going on that it was, but that gets back to the shallow thing. It's like, yay, it's like a roller coaster
ride. Well, right, it's just, you know, we like the crashes and the sparkly lights more than anything.
It's like a good Jerry Bruckheimer film.
Michael Bay.
But, yeah, but in Azkaban, I thought that had some good action as well, but I love the depth of that story.
Yes.
So far. Meg?
I think I'd have to agree. So far, I would put Prisoner of Azkaban first, and then the 2 world building would be last. I wouldn't really order those, but so this would probably be my second for the same reasons. I feel like...
Can you have a last A and a last B?
Right.
What?
It's 3A and 3B.
Say 1A and 1B, yeah. And we all 3 of us just went last A and last B.
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think if this is like I feel like this one was really just build up. It's just like suspense. It's a whole movie of suspense, like what's going to happen next. And then it ends with suspense. So we've stepped away from the world building, but now we're kind of in a weird middle point. Like, it's 8 movies long. That's a lot of movies.
Right.
So it's a lot of movies to stick with the same storyline. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
With some series, you get like a different story every time. And this is just like following the same build up to the same thing. So this was like super suspense building. And I feel like that's why it was more exciting. But that's what made it shallow. Like, there's not much to read into other than what we did with like, if it's just suspense, like it's all suspense. And that's what suspense is. It's on the surface, because if suspense wasn't on the surface, then it wouldn't be suspenseful, because you'd be thinking about it. You're not supposed to think about it. It's just supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
John, this is why we only have her on so often. She's too damn smart.
Right.
Just exposes our stupidity.
So, yeah, I'd agree with that. One other thing I forgot about that I wanted to touch on, though, from the time travel in your last Harry Potter podcast. Yeah. You talked about, you guys kind of got into a little quarrel about how, like, Dad, you
it's
thought
since
Hermione,
been proven that I was right.
Yeah, Dad, you thought Hermione was jumping, like was going back to classes over and over again, and John was like, no, just using it to go to, like, a bunch of classes. She's just using it to go to a bunch of classes. She's not, like, she's just, like, genuinely that smart. Like, they knew it from the beginning. Like, her parents are, like, her parents are muggles, and, like, that's a whole thing. And
I think we got a bad connection here. We're losing her.
She's, like, all she does is study before, like, coming to Hogwarts. Like, we know that. We know she's insanely smart, and she can do things like that. Like, she pulls a book out. Like, she's memorized all the books. She just uses it so she can learn more because she's that, like, she's that nerdy. She just wants to know everything, and she feels like she has something to prove. That's, like, her role in this. Like, she has muggle parents, and she feels like she has something to prove as a wizard because people don't accept her because of her parents and where she comes from. So that's why she tries to make herself the smartest wizard, and they help her with that to be like, okay, here, we're going to help you. Like, they feel for her, and they're like, here's this time turner, and it can help you jump everywhere. And that's just what I want to say. I was listening to that in the car, and I was like, no.
Best part of the conversation
no,
so far tonight.
Sean.
She's just a smart gal.
Super smart.
Yeah.
She likes to sit inside and study all day. Sounds familiar.
It's it's Leviosa. Not
Leviosa. Yeah. It's Leviosa. Oh, one more thing about this movie. We talk about every movie, something about an animal. How did you feel about those three spells that the professor did on the spider? Remember in the scene? Yeah, I know you hated it, but, like, do you remember it comes into play, though, like, in the future, so I just thought it was something we should talk about, like.
Yeah, he tortured the poor thing.
Yeah.
And what I like about, honestly, it's a good question, because what I like about scenes like that is that they'll take a horrible creature in a movie like this, like a spider, and they'll make it even, because it's in a wizard fantasy movie, they'll make it even more horrible than a spider that we have, right? It's a scary looking thing. And then through the writing of the movie, they put it through these awful paces, which makes you then forget that it's a horrible spider, and now you're feeling for this thing. And then in this case, in a Harry Potter movie, it dies. Yeah. And you feel even more for it. You're like, what the poor thing? Like, what are you doing? So it's like, I love when they do that in movies, and they take, that's the part of, like, what we were saying in October Faction, where you take stuff that's, you know, what you would normally think about something, and then you twist it around, and it makes you see it through their perspective. And even something as scary as a spider like that, it's like everybody in the room, they set the scene up where, get it off me, but then when it was killed, everybody in the room felt for it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really, really cool.
The other question I have is, did they ever establish the exact timeline between when Mad-Eye was replaced by David Tennant? Because do we know for sure in that classroom which version? Because he seems super reckless, right? Like, you think he's a professor and he's super reckless with the students in his class. Like, he turns one of them into a ferret, and, you know, he's doing all this crazy stuff. But was that, like, who was that?
That was David Tennant.
It was.
Before he's even introduced, the thing that you have to watch through the whole movie to see, I had no idea the whole time when I watched it for the first time, but the thing you have to watch is the Polyjuice. He has that little flask of the Polyjuice potion with him all the time, and they're like, oh, what is he drinking?
Okay.
But when he's first introduced in the dining hall, he's like,
he's drinking.
Swigging the.
Okay. See, I didn't pick up on that either.
So it's him the whole time. It's David Tennant the whole time. We never really see the real professor
very end.
Yeah, it's like the beginning, we see that, like, lightning and the scary man standing there, and then he kind of shows up and you're like, oh, it must have been him, but I think it was really supposed to be David Tennant that came in and then replaced him.
Okay.
Right, like, before anybody in Hogwarts was introduced to him.
Right.
with that whole scene with the spider. I feel like we got to see Neville Longbottom. Do you know who that is yet, Dad? Neville's the little nerdy kid with the brown hair.
He was like, the one that was into plants. He gave the gillyweed to
Harry. Yeah, he gave the gillyweed to Ron.
Oh, to Ron.
Or, yeah, okay. To Harry.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we really got to see him for the first time, and I feel like he plays the sensitive role in it, because I feel like sometimes in the movie, these kids have seen so much, and they're just like, oh, whatever, and they go about, like, their own kid life. But Neville seems damaged. Like, the poor kid, like, his whole essence is just like, I'm damaged. And we saw that with, like, he was made to stand there and watch this thing. He had to stand there and watch the spider be tortured when it was just like under that torture spell, and he was just like, it was agonizing to watch the spider, but it was even more agonizing to watch him. Like, he was in so much pain from that, and then he's the one, like, staring out the window after that, and the professor comes down. He's like, oh, like, come talk to me in my office. But I love him as a character. I'm excited for you to get to see him more in the next few movies, and I'm disappointed that he hasn't been more important of a character, like,
so far,
in the world building. I feel like he got, like, left out, but he's been there the whole time.
Yeah, he's been in every movie. Yeah, like you said, he's kind of been under the radar until...
That's, like, his life, though. He's, like, right. That kid that is there and people know his name, but, like, nobody pays attention to
right.
him. I think you'll like him.
But he pays off later.
He does.
Yeah, he does.
Cool.
He's great.
All right. Any final thoughts? Anything else that we need to cover?
Well, the only thing that just, I don't know, I guess I was going to just let this wrap up. I wasn't going to go any further, but do we ever find out, like, what the reason, like, why are they having this tournament in the first place? Like, what do you get? Like, is it like the,
why do we
first
have
of
the
all,
Olympics?
Right. First of all, I guess it's like the Olympics, because it doesn't happen every year, because this is the first time in 4 years we've heard about it. But, like, what do you get for winning this thing? Like, I guess you never really, like, what's the point of it?
Also expressed at the beginning that it's super dangerous. Why would you have this competition?
Right, like, why do you
know it's super dangerous?
Right,
and that somebody could
die. Don't
care. Right, they don't. Right, because they really don't care about anybody's well-being. We've established that. But yeah, I don't know. It just kind of struck me, like, I don't know what they were playing for. What was the what was the outcome of it? You know, does the school get something, or
I feel like they say that when they introduce it, they say, like, it's literally just for glory, and, like,
that's what I was just wondering if I missed.
Excited everyone is about that, like,
yeah,
that's all they want is that glory, and it's like bragging rights. And I mean, when you have people like the Malfoys in that world, like, who wouldn't want some bragging rights at some point, you know, something to come back with? And, like, what's his name, the one that died?
Oh, Cedric.
I'm blinking. Cedric, yeah. Cedric's dad, like, even is so proud of his son for being in it. So it seems like it's, like, a long past tradition that's been going on, like the Olympics. And, like, why do we have the Olympics? I don't know.
Well,
it's the thing we do.
Yeah.
It's a tradition at this point.
Yeah, but in modern times, people compete in the Olympics, yes, for their country, but also for the endorsements and all the money they're going to get. Like, I don't know what any of these were getting out of this Triwizard.
But then, like, why did the Olympics, what did you get when the Olympics started? A gold medal or a title, and then you just went about your life with that title, and that's like, that's an Olympian, and that's
what it started off as. And to be honest, most of the Olympians don't get a lot after the fact either. They do it for,
but that's what,
who won the javelin last time?
Well, but that's just like saying that, you know, the sports team that doesn't make the playoffs didn't get, I mean, everybody that competes isn't going to win.
Won.
But
right.
Yeah, but like the people that won, like, could you tell me the person that won bobsledding?
I don't know who won, but in their country, like, a gold medal has a value. Like, somewhere I heard that winning a gold medal has a value of, you know, $200,000 or whatever it is. Like, they're going to get some kind of financial recompense for it, even though we might not hear about them ever again because they won from Zimbabwe. But in that home country, they're all over the like, everybody there knows that person.
Yeah.
You know, they're selling Nikes on TV in Zimbabwe, so they're getting something. But
to answer that question, that could be very much what they get in their school. If you
That's
win,
what I was wondering, if they ever really told you what the stakes were. Like,
right.
I just didn't really know what they were playing for. Like, what's the...
What's
the reason? Like, why am I risking my life to do this?
They could have done a better job of building that up with maybe a little explanation here and there. I think the overall point, though, is again, to get to get back to what Meg was saying about how there's consequences to things. And when this movie started, you felt like, even when Dumbledore is saying like it's dangerous and this and that, and be mindful of putting your name in because this could, you know, you might not get chosen, but if you are, this is a dangerous thing, right? But as a viewer, you're sitting here going, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because every movie up until this point was PG. And
right. We're thinking, well, what's the danger really?
How bad could it be? And little do you know that at the end, a kid dies in this competition.
Right.
And so I think that the movie was more about, like what Meg said, is about the finality of things, the consequences of your actions type thing. And yeah, we could have used a little more explanation on why people are risking their lives to do this, but the overall story, the overall message, and I mean, to put a bow on this podcast, I mean, this is exactly what I was looking for when we started. I'm like, I didn't have that. I didn't understand, you know, I didn't get that. And through that this conversation, it helped me, you know, get a deeper meaning. And I'm looking forward to watching it again, actually, and going, oh, I see here. I don't think it's as deep as Azkaban,
no.
But it, you know, much deeper than when I started the podcast.
And for the, like, kids in that universe, it's a lesson that carried through. Like, they were so frivolous in making that decision. Like, everybody's standing around the cup, like, cheering and, like, making jokes with each other when they throw a name in. And then, like, be careful what you get yourself tangled up in. Like, and I feel like it's so easy in that world to get tangled up in Voldemort's side of things because of fear. So it's like, be careful what you're putting yourself into because you can't get out. And like, that was like the cup. Like, once you put your name in that cup, that's a legal binding contract.
Right.
And they said that, like, the goblet is a binding contract. And that's why the ministry guy was like, we have to do that.
Right.
Like, we have to let him do it. So you're getting yourself into this binding contract, and it could have consequences, and you need to know that before you get yourself into things. Because while that's a contract with a goblet, if you get yourself tangled up in things with Voldemort, you're not getting out. Like, you're in it, and you're serving him, or you're in deep doo-doo. Like, and that, for the kids, is something they've never experienced before, because Voldemort has been gone since Harry was one.
Right.
But all the adults have experienced that, so it's like a lesson for them to build into what's coming.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can't wait to do the next one. We'll be doing that. We'll wait till like what, May, when you come home? Or you're busy, so you can't even watch the next one.
Cool.
Right? Meg.
I'm done in May. It just depends on everything else in life, like work, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, but we could do it like this though.
Homework is done in May.
Well, the
last
time,
week of April.
Yeah. The last Harry Potter was in November.
Yeah.
The last I was on was in August.
Yeah.
Before I even came back.
Yeah, because we did the last one, just you and I.
Yeah. Yeah, we fumbled our way through. No, no, that was actually a good one.
That was a good one.
Yeah. I like
There's
that.
A lot
like,
to talk about with that movie, too, though.
Yeah.
It was such a deep movie.
Right. How are the next movies coming up? Are they deep?
So good. Deeper. They're deep and action filled. And
yeah, they keep ramping up. Like, they honestly just keep getting better from.
They pull you in.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're smart by the end. Like, you feel like you're like, oh, I know so many things now. Well, because they start to spoon feed you some things, but it
seems
like they do it in such a subtle way that you're like, oh, I saw that coming.
Right. I figured it
but
out.
But they totally gave it to you. But it makes you feel really good about yourself, so it's fun in that way too.
Oh, good. I could use some spoon feeding.
It's also movies for children, and we're sitting here picking it apart. Like,
I know.
Like, what does it mean?
This is so deep.
Yeah, because I'm like, when my kids saw this when they were like 7, are they like getting all the layers? You know?
Yeah.
It's like an onion. Onions have layers.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's why I think they're good, because just like anything entertainment, there's like, go watch any Pixar movie. They're like on the surface for the kids, but there's stuff for the adults too. And that's why I think these things have rewatchability through, like, my kids watch these movies 100 times through all different ages. And I think that you can just keep picking things out, even though you've seen it a couple of times. Because, like, what hits you on the surface when you're, I don't know, when did this come out? 2005? So, yeah. Like, when you're six or seven, like, my oldest daughter was six when this came out. Now she's, you know, 21 or whatever. So, what did she not catch when she was six that she's going to pick up on now?
Right. I thought, and I mean, one final point. I thought it played well for being a movie from 2005, too. I thought the special effects, I thought everything, it looked pretty good.
Yeah, the only thing that I bumped into a little bit was that last transformation at the end from Mad-Eye to Doctor Who. It seemed,
that's what I called him, too. I don't know his name.
David Tennant.
David Tennant, yeah. That's who he is in this movie.
The Purple Man in Doctor Who. But that transformation was a little wonky. But it was, like you said, it was 15 years ago. But it would have been done better today. But other than that, yeah, all the, like, the dragons still looked very believable. Like, all that stuff played pretty well for a 15-year-old
movie. Yeah, they looked like real dragons to me, the ones I've seen.
Everyone I've ever seen looked just like that.
The way they shot Hogwarts, though, wasn't like what they would do today. Like, they'd build it in a computer today, but they, like, built Hogwarts and then, like, flew a tiny camera around it. Like they built the Hogwarts and then used that. So, like, they had different ways of doing it, but it's played out really well still.
Well, and then even from, like, when did, you know, this was 2005, right, 15 years ago, but when was, like, Sorceress, when was the first one?
01.
01, so just 4 years before. But if you looked at even the progression from the first movie to this movie, like, the flying on the broom seemed so much more believable in this movie than it did in the first movie. Like, it wasn't quite as shaky. Yeah. Like, the effects, even just in 4 years, improved dramatically, I think, with these movies.
I feel like that's a mix of, like, effects and technology.
Which was the first one, Chamber of Secrets?
Right. No.
Okay, that was...
Sorcerer's Stone was the first one.
So Chamber of Secrets was 02, so yeah, 01. 01. Was
okay. I just didn't realize these came, like, that close together back then.
Yeah. I think it's a mix of, though, like, the technology getting better slowly, but also, like, we had said before that just the acting, because, like, they were kids in that. Well, like, they were, like, genuine children in that. So, like, teaching the kid to work with whatever technology you had was probably a lot more difficult. And now they're really sinking into their roles and they've done this before or are more adaptable to new technology. And they're, like, they know what acting is at this point. So it comes off a lot more believable because they come off a lot more believable as the character. So if you can sell the character, you can sell the experience. But if you're still not comfortable in the role as the character, it's a lot more difficult to make people believe you're having that experience.
Yeah, well, and also, like you said, a bit of it is technology, but I guess it also illustrates, like, Harry's proficiency with riding, right? Because in the first movie, he doesn't know how to ride a broom. He's learning, where by this movie, he is proficient with it. So I guess by accident, they are actually showing him becoming better with the skill of riding, you know, riding a broom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that
by this movie, they say, like, he's, like, possibly the best rider in the world.
Yeah,
like,
he's really.
They have the best rat. Crumb is supposed to be the best cat, whatever they, what's it called? A catcher?
Yeah, they have the seeker and what is he?
Oh, a seeker. He's
the
seeker.
The seeker, right, yeah.
Yeah, so he's supposed to be, like, the best one in the world, but somebody makes the comment, like, oh, I heard you. Oh, the David Tennant character makes the comment as the professor, like, oh, I heard you can fly, like, even better than Crumb. So he's, like, hinting at, like, you're really good. So they had to really sell it after that comment.
Right. You had to be good.
After that, you kind of have to be good.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah. I think so.
Now are we ready?
Yeah, now I have nothing else. Yeah. Nothing else stupid
now
to
we're
ask.
Wrapping up.
All right. That was good.
Yeah.
Slow start, but then everybody wanted to.
Everybody wanted to talk. Yeah.
You're like, wait, but one more point.
Yeah, I know. All right. So, John, what do we have coming up on Wednesday? Pay attention, Meg, so you can head to your nearest comic book store.
They don't have those in Connecticut. I'm kidding.
There's one Joe goes to.
All right. So, coming up in a couple of days here on Wednesday, we have Cable issue number 1. So this is the next Dawn of X title in the endless sea of Dawn of X titles that we currently are swimming in.
Yep.
We have Decorum issue number 1. This is from Image, but it's actually written by Jonathan Hickman. So I'm pretty interested to see what this book is about because I haven't had a chance to read a preview of it yet. And then Star Wars Bounty Hunters, issue number one, which I have since discovered since FOC that it is a ongoing series and not a one-shot. So I think there's four issues.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's four issues total for this.
Cool.
So that's what we have.
That sounds good.
I would love to head to my nearest comic book store, but I already pay for cable. I don't want to pay for a second cable.
See what she did there?
Oh, man.
It's the daughter doing that. The daughter doing dad jokes.
I was just going to say, coming in hot with the dad jokes. That's my girl. Oh, boy. Oh, God.
On that note.
On that note. So, will you pay for two cables this week? Let us know on Twitter at brightside_chat. Or you could email us at brightsidechat@gmail.com. Check out all the great podcasts at nerdylegion.com. And you can subscribe to all the podcasts right there with one button. You can go on iTunes and you could rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. That would be great. How many stars do we like, John?
I like 5 stars.
Yes, I like 5. If you could give 6, I'd love that too, but you can't. So you could do 5. It doesn't hurt you, right?
It's painless. Hurt.
Makes you feel good at the end. Write something nice. If you have nothing nice to say, tell us on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's what that place is for.
That's what that cesspool is for.
Have you ever gotten a fan email?
Yeah. Email? I don't get them at all, but...
I was wondering, you always say your email, and I feel like I've never emailed someone how much I like them.
Yeah, I've mentioned people that have said stuff, but I don't say where because I feel like if you're emailing, it's more private. So yeah,
more
I'll just say, oh, somebody asked me this. Yeah, it's different. Cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we
keep up the emails.
Keep up the emails. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, but people contact me there, but I don't frequent that one, but I get the alerts when people contact me, so I use that too. So but the main one that we converse on is Twitter. I tried keeping up with all of them. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. Meg and I will take off now. We have to fly back to the Northeast.
There you go. I can
get your arms ready,
lock
Meg.
Lock up and go
Start
home.
Not your flapping. You gotta lock the store up and go home. Actually, you can't lock up. It's Monday morning.
That's true. I have to open up.
That's true. You guys, yeah. Exactly.
I fell into my own ruse.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Meg, thanks a lot. You taught me a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming on.
Letting me talk.
Making the bright side chat bright.
Right, yep. Somebody has to do it after you and your performance last week.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before I live that one down. All right, let's get out of here.
All right.
We'll see you on Thursday.
All right.
Have a great week, everybody.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.